And Upanishkramana, when the child is taken out for the first time, we have a ritual called Upanishkramana. And when the child is given solid food for the first time, Annaprasana, that is the ritual. And the ear boring ceremony, that is Karnaveda. And the first birthday ceremony, that is Varshavardhana. And beginning of education, that is when the child is taught the alphabets for the first time, Chaula. Upanayana, the proper educational ceremony, when the son is handed over to the hands of a teacher for education. And Keshanta, when he gets the tuft for the first time, it should precede the Upanayana. And then Samavartana, after the completion of education, when the bachelor returns to perform the completing his studies and is fit for marriage. These are the 18 rituals mentioned. But in the present day context, not all of them are performed according to the ritual tradition. Vivaha is, of course, performed in good fashion. But Ritu Sangamana and Garbhadhana are not performed as separate rituals. We see that they are performed in the course of the Vivaha itself. And then we have separate rituals called Pumsavana, Anavalobhana, and Simantonnayana. All the three are performed together in the 5th month or in the 7th month of the pregnant woman. Vishnubali, the accepting Vaikansikriya Sutra, followers of Vaikansikriya Sutra, others do not perform this particular ritual. We have Jatakarma, that is the birth ritual, and then rising up from the bed, there is one ritual for that, and the naming ceremony. All the three are together performed on the 10th day after the birth of the child, Jatakarma, Namakarana, Uttana, everything. And then nobody performs a ritual for when the child is taken out for the first time out of the house. Upanishkramana is almost gone out of use. Annaprasana also is very rarely performed when the child is introduced into solid food. Karnaveda, ear boring ceremony, is no separate ritual is performed, but the ear is bored on the occasion of the first birthday of the child. Varshavartana, first birthday of the child, is always celebrated. And Chaula, Upanayana, Keshanta, these are all performed along with, together, Upanayana. And Samavartana is nowhere performed, as far as we know. So altogether we find that 5 or 6 rituals are performed after the 18. The rest are clubbed with the other major rituals, or they are not performed at all. They have got dropped in the course of time. So this is the state of rituals in the present day context. And even in the performance of these major rituals, a number of changes have taken place. Unfortunately, the mantras are in Sanskrit, and neither the priest nor the performers know Sanskrit. Even to a working, they do not have even a working knowledge of Sanskrit. So what happens is the performers do not know what mantra is chanted by the priest, and the priest is also in great hurry because they have got a lot of demand, and therefore many of the rituals have got truncated. They are performed in a condensed fashion, and many important items have got dropped. There is generally more emphasis on the social part of the marriage, people gathering together and exchanging words, and then the social element like the reception in the marriage. These things are given much more importance than the ritual part of it. And in these days of so-called modernity, everybody is in great hurry, and therefore they pressurize the priest to complete the rituals as quickly as possible so that they can attend to the other social activities. So this is how it goes on. And I can just draw your attention to one or two other things before we can have a question and answer session, perhaps in a detailed fashion. Well, again, in continuation of why we should perform the rituals, I said it is for the sake of the posterity, and for the children, and for the sake of the society. I may just quote one small story, not as 100% story. There was a good teacher, very good teacher, and however good he was, he could only transmit 90% of his knowledge to his shishya. The shishya was very good, extremely good, but he could grasp only 80% of what the teacher taught. Already it has now reduced to 81%. And he transmitted, he was again a very good teacher, he transmitted only 90% of what he had learnt. There was a brilliant student, not to speak of the ordinary students, average students and indifferent students. Even a brilliant student, he gathered 90% of what the teacher taught. And he studied 90% of it. He could grasp only 90% of what was told in the book. He could write only 90% of what he has grasped. And then he got, however, though he has written very well, he could get only 90% of what he expected. So ultimately, now it has come to 47%. So this is the state of things. If we go on forgetting our own tradition and heritage, generation to generation, there will be degradation. Well, I think there are many other things which we about which we have discussed in detail. There are a lot of secular elements for that matter in the Vedic Griha Sutras. And for example, in the course of the performance of the Upanayana, the student is expected to observe Brahmacharya. And this is in fact very important for a student, because unless he observes Brahmacharya, it will be very difficult for him to concentrate on the study. And therefore it is quite relevant even for today. And great thinkers have emphasized this particular point. A student should abstain from wine, meat and women. He should avoid spicy food. He should refrain from using perfumes. He should not seek comforts. Because there is a saying in Sanskrit, Sukharti chet tyajet vidyam. Vidyarthi chet tyajet sukham. Sukhartinaha kuto vidya. Vidyarthinaha kuto sukham. If you are running after comforts, forget about education. You want good education, you have to sacrifice some of your comforts. How can education be attained without sacrificing the comforts? And therefore, a strict brahmacharya is, emphasized for all students. And it is said in the course of some of the Griha Sutras also that there are strict instructions, but still the students, because of their age, they may commit small mistakes. And the teacher has to be very patient. And even if the student were to transgress the limits, the teacher should try to correct him through loving words and not threaten him with punishments. Chodita atikrame dandena nahanyat, says the scripture. And a teacher should never curse his own student. Dushtavakyaha na shapati. And it is also said the teacher will be held responsible for the sins committed by the student. So he should be on his guard.
Beware.
And a teacher is expected to mold the life of a student, since the teacher takes care of the student and he is like his father. There are five fathers for everybody, for that matter. Janita cha upaneta cha yascha vidya prayachati annadata bhayatrata panchayate pitarasmrutaha. These five people are equivalent to father. Of course, one's own father. And then upaneta, one who performs upanayana, a spiritual teacher. And a spiritual teacher may be different from actual teacher who imparts knowledge. And therefore, a teacher who imparts knowledge, that is one's own father, a family priest for that matter, and teacher who may teach, annadata, one who offers food, one who gives food and protects you, an employer for that matter, and bhayatrata, one who protects you from all fears, the administrator, the king, or the country, the ruler. these five are equivalent to only the father itself. And as we have seen, most of the instructions that are given to the student during the Upanayana, they emphasize the control of the sense organs. Because as is said in the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano anuvidhiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayur nama mimambasi. One who does not control the sense organs, he is dragged into pitfalls and his intellect is gone and he will tremble, or he will be in great trouble, like a small boat which is tossed by the waves in an ocean. And therefore one has to be very, very careful of the sense organs, and that is what brahmacharya means. There are many other things, like offering of gifts. One had, while offering gifts to the people, the noble people, the priests, one has to show, say, you should not feel that you are great and you are giving gifts. You should be humbled, that you should be grateful to the priest for having come forward to accept the gift that you are offering. It's not like you are offering and he is taking. He has given an opportunity for you to give. So, Hiranyam, Bhumim, Ashwam, Gam, Annam, Vasasthilan, Ghritam, Avidvan, Pratigrinnato, Bhasmi, Bhavishyati, Daruvat. Therefore, the person who receives the gift must also be a fitting person, patra, a proper person. And to such persons, one has to hand over gifts with all humility. And the Griha Sutra also lay emphasis on the importance of food, because the character of a person is decided by the food that one takes. One is expected to take the sattvika type of food so that life will be peaceful and happy, and he will be able to entertain good thoughts in his mind. And details of this importance of food we have already discussed in the earlier seminar on food, and therefore I don't want to go into it in detail. Well, there are many other secular remnants, as the parents of the bride and bridegroom should seek proper alliance. What are the qualities expected of a bridegroom? What are the qualities expected of a bride? Which are quite relevant even today, and which have got secular element in them. So I think we have covered almost all the points that I wanted to say in this lecture. Now we can have a question and answer session.
Nobody look at me.
Well, I have a comment to make. Said, when the rituals are ignored, social disorder takes place. I shall tell you a ritual. By eliminating that from the society has become better. I'm talking about Kerala. About 50 years ago, when a girl matured, on the fourth day of that event, she is taken to a public tank. You know, Kerala people used to take baths in public tanks and rivers. And a girl of her age, but not matured, she will also fall. And they take bath in public. All the relatives and friends and even others will come. And they make a triangle with the banana stem. They peel it, make it. And then it is decorated, and three or four torches are lighted. And while the girl is taking bath, this is floated to remove all the evils. Then she is taken in procession back to her house with the sword and people making lot of noise. As a child, I have seen this, and it always looked to me, it was a public announcement that this girl is now ready for marriage or whatever it is. Now, that custom has disappeared virtually. Perhaps in today's Kerala, girls don't even take bath in the tank. So that has not created any social unrest. In fact, it has only made the status of the girls
better.
A little better.
Okay. Well, I don't mean to say that all rituals are good. In fact, there are certain rituals which have come by through superstition. As I explained in the course of the earlier lectures, how a teacher was very fond of a cat, and the cat was giving him it was sort of a nuisance for him. So in the course of performance ritual, he would just cover it with a basket. And his disciples, after the demise of the guru, they thought that it is also part of the ritual. They used to bring a cat from somewhere and keep it near the ritual place and cover it with a basket. So some of the rituals have come through superstitious beliefs like that. And such rituals, which are a blot on the society, they automatically disappear. Many other rituals, as you say, have disappeared. And this ritual which you say is not sanctioned in any Grihya text. It is not sanctioned in any... Some of them are, you know, have been incorporated into... Because in that particular society, it was considered to be good. And rituals keep changing over the ages. Many things keep changing. There are many other traditions. Dress habits keep changing. Within few years, dress habits change. Within few months, when a particular type of dress is introduced in the West, immediately within 1 month, it comes to Bombay and then spreads to throughout India. So, changes occur. So, some of these rituals, which have been somehow incorporated into a particular society for a particular age, it has some relevance at that particular time, perhaps. It was necessary to announce to the public that this girl is ready for marriage. It was perhaps considered necessary. And it was followed. Because unless it has relevance, people would not have followed for some years, whatever. How many years it was followed in Kerala, we do not know. And then the society found that it is of no use. Automatically it gets dropped. So it is not the fault of the ritual for that matter. It's only a question of convenience. People find that it is good or bad. Society decides automatically. The public decide whether this government is good or bad. They vote them out of power if a particular government is not functioning properly. Likewise, some of the rituals which have no relevance, they get dropped automatically.
You have said during the marriage ceremony and all, the priest is under pressure to make the ceremony very short or whatever it is. And does the priest listen to the parents, or he has a say to say, okay, look, these are the most essential things I have to do and it will take so much time? What does he do in that case?
In majority of the cases, the priest says that this will take this much time and you will have to observe. But then there are also occasions when there is so much of pressure on him and therefore he has to oblige the parents. So we cannot blame him also.
No, I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying that.
But in the present day, I find in a lot of marriages that are taking place today, the priests take a lead. They go to the mic and announce. At least for 10-15 minutes, they give a short lecture. This is the significance of the marriage ritual. This is the significance of this ritual. In fact, they say, don't come and shake hands with the bride or the bridegroom right now. Congratulate them. You can just throw some flowers on them and bless them. Because many more rituals are to be continued. Because the most important ritual in Tamil Nadu, for example, in the course of the marriage is tying the Mangala Sutra. Once that is over, people think that everything is over. The entire ritual is over. They are now immediately in a hurry to congratulate the bride or bridegroom and adjourn for lunch. But the priest makes an announcement. Priest don't come and shake hands with them. They have got many other important rituals. This is only one stage. Then they have to do Panigrahana, which is very important. And then Ashwarohana, mounting the stone ritual. And then Lajohama and going around the fire and all these things. There are many more important rituals. They should not be separated.
Sit
now.
On the swing and...
Yeah, that is over already.
That's what happens before later.
That is over already. And therefore, don't separate them now by separately now congratulating them. They have to hold their hands together. And if you come and hold her hand or his hand, it puts them in kind of inconvenience. We don't. They give a lecture, and that custom is slowly on the way out. Many people understand, and it spreads very fast.
The There is a verse which I learned long time ago about the qualities of a bride. You may translate that. Karyeshu Mantri, Karaneshu Dasi, Uveshu Lakshmi, Chamaya Dharitri, Sneheshu Mata, Chayaneshu Vesha, Shatkarmanari, Sahadharma Patni.
Qualities of a wife. She has to be like a minister advising her husband on important occasions. She has to be a friend on occasion, sharing with him the happiness and misery also. And during bedtime, she should be like a prostitute. She should...
so on and so forth.
So on and so forth.
six qualities.
Qualities. And she should be like a mother.
But has it come from old times? Because it is a verse which is...
Yes.
Putting on a medical hat, I have one problem with Dr. Herbert Benson's analysis of the effect of Om. He says nearly 40% of women who believed infertile conceived within 6 months of
infertile.
Practice. Believed infertile, conceived within 6 months of practicing the technique. That 40% actually falls into what we call the placebo effect.
Well, I don't know about that. If
so
you've got any doubts, you can...
No, all I'm saying is that anything, it doesn't matter.
You can send an email to Professor Benson and then get it clarified.
That part comes under, so it's quoting that, is that I said as putting the hat of the doubting Thomas there. The second part is that I just find that my problems with why I found rituals... I mean, I created antibodies within me for rituals, was that they were never ever looked at in a hermeneutic fashion. In other words, put it into the social context of when they started, so that you then understood the actual meaning of that ritual. And that it had meaning at that historical period, and it may not have the meaning the current historical period, the current contemporary period. And because that's been a major failure of that, because we just say it came from time gone by, and we make a guess actually as to what would have been the thinking behind the ritual, what would have been, but we never actually have delved properly into what was the history of that nation at that time when that ritual was performed. So we haven't actually looked at what is the relevance then and what is the relevance today. And when you look at it like that, my belief is most of the rituals would go by the wayside, and they would be left with core rituals that then lay, which are, have a very theological implication and will lay the foundation for the moral values, which can be expressed in terms of dharma and karma and the bhakti. Until and unless that is done, the value of ritual as an expression of these three main goals of dharma, karma and bhakti, it fails quite seriously. That's my cynical outward look.
The point that you mentioned, the historical relevance which we fail to see. Well, unfortunately, history is one of the weak points in every aspect of Indian life. It is not only with respect to the rituals, with respect to the historical events, with respect to the literature. Nowhere, excepting a few works, nowhere do we find a correct, the historical date being prescribed. Very rarely we have some inscriptions, we have some evidences here and there. But the majority of the events, well, Indians generally lack that sense. Because of their philosophical outlook. A poet would never care to record the date of his work, not even his name. It is known from tradition. Because he would say, well, if my work is good enough to last for centuries, let it last. If God wills that it is not worthy, then let it go basically. And the general tendency, what if Ravana rules or Rama rules, what does it matter? So some of these tendencies, by nature, it has been incorporated in the minds of the Hindus, and therefore history definitely suffers. Well, we do not know still even the greatest of Sanskrit poets regarding Kalidasa, whether he lived during the 1st century BC or 4th century AD or 6th century AD or later. We do not know very clearly about Shankaracharya's date even, though generally it is accepted that he belonged to 8th century AD. There are still theories which say that he should have lived during 1st century BC. So vast, not just 10 or 15 years, hundreds of years, conjectures, the dates oscillate between one time and then another 700, 800 years. So, we do not know about the date of the Vedas, it is very difficult to decide. We do not know about the authorship or number of works. We have to make some conjectures. Well, that is how we have grown up. What to do? So, likewise, it is very difficult to say when a particular ritual came into being. But since there are majority of them are recorded already in the very ancient the ritual literature, we can understand that they have got very old tradition, very ancient tradition. That's all we can say. And, well, I think personally, performance of the ritual and understanding its significance is more important than simply going into the historical aspect of it. It may be good, it is good to know about it. But in case we are not able to decide about it, I do not care when the marriage ceremony was started. I would rather be interested in performing the marriage of my daughter or son. And then, well, as you say, some of the core rituals. So we are not performing all the 40 samskaras are prescribed. As I said, only 7 or 8 maximum are performed nowadays. The 22 yajnas are nowhere nowadays performed, very rarely. The time has got its own rule. Nobody can transcend the powers of time. In course of time, this automatically the society and the time is a leveler of everything, it levels. And even the so-called bodily samskaras, the 18 samskaras, as I have already explained, only 6 or 7 are performed, other things are clubbed with one another. It doesn't mean that they have lost their significance. They have their significance, but due to various other factors, they are clubbed with one another, time factor, and convenience, and the other pressures, social pressures, political pressures, so many things we can say. So, well, it is for us to understand the significance of it and continue with it, whatever has been handed down to the tradition. It has stood by us. It has been good for us so many centuries. Why not continue?
I'll take this and give you a simple example where my query comes in. If you take the antenatal ceremonies, as you've explained, there are some antenatal ceremonies that are supposed to be mantras that will enable both the mother and child to remain healthy throughout the pregnancy period. Now, it had validity at those times when the antenatal care available was not up to the mark. So you then depended on other methods of having the antenatal care. But today, for example, the antenatal care, due to the nature of its quality, we don't have to depend on mantras for the health of the mother and the child, but rather look at the other mantras that actually help to improve probably the bhakti concept of both the mother and the child, because the mother feels calm, the mother has the bhakti, the mother's then it is transmitted to the unborn child as well. So we can then look at what in today's context would be the most beneficial rituals, and this is what I mean by the evolution of rituals having a contextual meaning to it as well.
Yes, your question is very valid. As I have told you in the beginning, that is why I gave you some material which is culled out from the newspapers and all. Well, of course, you can say this performance of, say, prenatal ceremonies have no relevance because we got a lot of medical facilities. You may have a lot of medical facilities, but what about the psychology of the girl who is expecting the delivery of a child? In spite of all the medical facilities you can provide, unless the girl has, you know, the confidence that she can deliver child well, nobody can help, no doctor can help any patient for that matter, unless there is a will to survive the particular patient. No doctor for that matter, in spite of the excellent, best medical facilities, can cure anybody for that matter. So there are things which are beyond your medical facilities, psychological elements, other aspects. As you say, bhakti is important, all these things that we have discussed it in the course of our lectures, the bhakti element and the karma element, all those things, the philosophy of Griha rituals, all these are important. In addition to that, okay, you give her best medical attention, but what prevents you from performing the ritual also, which can be an added advantage to her, giving her some psychological boost? Why should we deny that?
It's not a question of denying, it's a question of being very prescriptive in the sense that thou shalt perform, if not, it's harmful. My thing is that the ritual has its place, so does the alternative has its place, and it's to evolve the ritual to those that can meet current demands. I'm just looking at a sociological aspect of rituals.
I think it was being about two different areas. Mm-hmm. Talking about preemptive, like formulas, mantras that we recited, both the baby and the woman are not sick yet, so you would recite mantras as a preemptive, you know, way to make sure that things will actually unfold properly. And I think you were speaking about maybe the baby or the pregnant woman, mother, in case where there was already an illness. In that case, psychologically speaking, it might be very helpful for her and the baby to, you know, actually recite, for her to recite mantras and for the baby to hear the mantra as well. So I think there's two different things.
Yeah, I accept that. What I'm trying to say is that is to evolve the rituals into, instead of saying these are prescribed items, thou shalt perform as a doctrine or as an edict, or rather than look at it as a, these are rituals, they can help you. I'm looking at why rituals are disappearing, why we are discarding them, and due to personal experience as to why I discard it and why I would like to see some rituals, and I'm bringing those reasons in, rather than saying, oh, these rituals will help you, that's it, full stop. Because I know, don't take paternalistic attitude towards the rituals that should be performed by another person, but look at it as a cooperative effort, that you have this, you can do this, this can help, let's go there. So the whole point is that through understanding, you get the cooperation and you get the active participation.
That is the emphasis of the entire course of the lectures.
Mm-hmm.
This aimed at spreading this message that rituals have got their significance. We have to understand, we can apply our reasoning power, and definitely majority of them are helpful in one way or the other.
I have a sort of speculation about rituals. These rituals were developed at a time when the society was very much divided by class, and most of the rituals were confined to the upper class, and they had so much time and so much wealth, the others labored and produced, and they have to spend this time in a way which will fulfill their status. So they indulge in these long rituals, but now the system, society has changed, it is more socialistic, so the class system has broken down, and with the breakdown of the class system, the rituals have started declining and disappearing. So I think when there was so much time for people to indulge in these sort of things, it was in force.
We don't know whether they have too much time. You are just imagining.
No, but the poor people never practiced the rituals.
No,
they
no.
didn't bring the priests.
No,
they
no.
didn't do these
yes,
things.
Yes, no. Poor people also performed rituals in a way that was possible for them. They will.
Yeah,
they
but
will
very
the priest,
much.
I cannot pay you so much as the other people are paying, but still I want to perform this. Yes, they will. It will be performed. All the rituals are prescribed for all classes of people.
Mm.
There is no distinction mentioned in the major Griha Sutras. They have to be performed by everybody alike. It is for you to derive the benefits. Many of these for the matter. They are open for you well, you perform them and get benefit of it. It is for your benefit that it is prescribed.
And
curious, I have a related question about language. I'm thinking different religious traditions are more or less open to changing or translating. And I'm thinking in Islam, as far as I understand, many of the most important prayers in worship have to be in the Arabic language, regardless of where it is in the world. Different Jewish communities, from Orthodox, which keep the strict Hebrew, to the Reformed, which use whatever the local language may be. And then most of the Christian churches switched over to vernacular, you know, the whatever the common language would be. And in the 1960s, the Roman Catholic Church basically moved from Latin to all the different languages. What do you think would be gained or lost, let's say, by saying that from now on most of the samskaras should simply be done in the local language, and that Sanskrit, since very few people understand it, there's nothing to be gained by using the Sanskrit? Or would you hold the view that the Sanskrit has a certain power to it that should not be given up? Can we translate? Can we do it all in English?
We
or
can
French
translate,
or
but then the power of the mantra lies not only in its meaning, but also in the way of chanting, its accent, and its reverberation, and its other effects for that matter. And this perhaps cannot be got by simply translating into other language.
But how do you deal with the problem that most people do not understand? You'd say even if they don't understand, that the power is more important than understanding.
Yeah, that is a Mimam Sakha view, it's a certain in an angle. Well, that is another thing. It is good for you because you chant it in a particular fashion, it has got an effect. As I have given an instance, certain syllables like Om, they somehow have an effect. Well, in addition to what I have been saying, I may be interested in rituals and Hindu tradition, I am saying. But what makes the doctor from a distant land say that? So, definitely there is some effect on the particular syllables pronounced in a particular fashion.
There is evidence, for example, playing a particular type of music increases the listener's cognitive function, especially problem solving, for a short period of time, anything between to 10 minutes at the most. So if you look at, having attended varieties of rituals where the Shastris have got the ability of good pronunciation, good rhythm sense, and the effect, the whole is a lot quieter when they perform the rituals than one who does it, whose pronunciation is poor and whose lacks a rhythm and the musicality is gone, that you find the complete difference. And there is something about the way certain words are pronounced. It seems to affect particular aspects of you, and you don't understand a word of it, but it puts you in the mood. It's like having the Gregorian chant. Even a listener who doesn't know anything, can't understand the language, can get into the mood of bhakti.
But I think
it's synesthetic. Yeah.
My point is, I think, favoring what Professor was saying, that before you're talking about finding the original context, see if they mean anything, and then dropping them today if they don't mean anything. Keeping the Sanskrit, I think, is also an argument for keeping the rituals, that samskara and Sanskrit really go together in terms of, even if you don't see the relevance of it, or even if you don't see the meaning of it, do it anyway. And that the idea of saying, I'll change the rituals because they don't mean anything, but I'll keep the Sanskrit because good pronunciation calms my mind, I don't think that works very well. And I think a fluidity of practice, fluidity of language, or tradition is a stronger connection.
About the Ashwatha tree, why, in my view, it has a scientific aspect. Every temple or place of worship, they used to have this Ashwatha tree. And people go and walk around it and daily pray. Now, that as walking itself is an exercise, and the Ashwatha produces a lot of oxygen. And perhaps the houses in those days were rather crammed with little ventilation. So they become naturally healthy by every day going and walking around the tree and absorbing purified air. So, of course, combined with the devotion to the God or Goddess, plus this, keep them longer in healthy state.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a scientific aspect to that.
Yes. That is true, but one question may arise. Why not around the coconut tree? Why around Ashoka
tree? Yeah, but
tree?
The coconut tree doesn't come in front of a temple.
Yeah, but
it is
go around the temple instead.
Yeah, go around. Also, most of the temples had this.
That is why I quoted that instance of Satyavan Satyavgat. Certain particular trees have got certain legends also associated with them.
Yeah,
so also got
true.
Many a tree, a particular tree is associated with a particular Maharshi or a particular incident, and that has certain given room for a particular tradition being set up and a ritual being followed. That is the reason why.
Taking on another lateral thinking about rituals as to another reason, it could be why rituals are on the wane, is that rituals had a way of giving us an identity for the individual, a social identity. The unborn child is now identified as recognized as an unborn child, the child that is born, the child of 1 year, and so on and so forth. And you are establishing its identity as well. But when you come to today's society, there are other ways of creating social identity. And as a result, the rituals, the effect of rituals on creating the social identity has dropped, so that in itself weakens the importance of rituals.
Many people consider simply modern scientific explanations about natural phenomena just as plausible. They say, well, it was working at some point in time when we didn't have that that knowledge, but today we do, and therefore we can do away with various religions and myths and therefore rituals.
I think today the plus side is that today we can make an active choice to follow the rituals. It's a choice that we can make. In the ancient time, the choice was less. So the rituals, in fact, begin to have greater significance because you choose to do it, not you had to do it.
Well, that wouldn't work.
I told you I'm a left-wing.
It's all right. I respect even left-wing people.
Even left-wing people.
I'm very glad you think they're even regarded as a people.
Now tell me, how do you chant Om? And how just Om?
I've got a book that tells you.
Like that?
I've got a book that tells you the stages.
The best way is to get the mantra taught to you by a qualified teacher.
I'm not finding a qualified teacher. That's why I'm asking.
I will give you the book that takes you into the steps.
Okay.
It's to do with the breathing.
Yes, along with the pranayama.
Okay.
It is Aum. It's
yes.
Aum.
Okay.
It's opening the mouth.
Yes.
Ah. 50% of your breath is gone. And when that is gone, you then breathe Aum. As you go, when the M comes in, you've actually.
Just as music, some instrumental music.
It's
it can simply enchant
like
you.
Om, om, om.
You may not understand the raga.
No.
Yes.
So it is a breathing. And if you take that breathing cycle slowly, it's supposed to be one om, five non om, one om, five non om.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that, by the time you've done 10 minutes of that, you're fast asleep.
I thank everyone of you for
thank
the
encouragement.
Thank
you very
much.
For your entertaining lectures.
I must thank you. Mm-hmm. And unless there are listeners, well, we will be dispirited and dejected. You have all made this choice possible, and I thank every one of you.
Thank you.
So you are off tomorrow evening?
Tomorrow I have a lecture in Mr. Manav's college.
Oh, yeah, you told me. And then Saturday to London?
Sunday to Birmingham.
So towards the end, you are becoming very busy.
Yeah.
Did you inquire anything more about your talking about?
That you will do on Saturday when he goes to London.
Yes, regarding Swaminarayan.
Yeah.
didn't talk here.
About what?
About, no, he was wondering.
Coming back again?
Mr. Shaunaka the other day announced to himself and also in our meeting that we will be inviting Ram Ratnam next year also.
Mm-hmm.
So in our probability, I may be coming here next April.
I see.
So meanwhile, we can think about the other plans of continuing life in Australia if possible.
Yeah.
And depends on many other factors.
On Tuesday, you are leaving?
Yes.
Sure.
I have an aged mother, so
yeah.
I cannot leave and come here. So there's many other things complicated. Let us see how it goes.
Yeah,
at least one year.
Yeah.
1 year time is left. And
maybe
if somebody can come forward to take care of my mother, perhaps the plans can work out.
Wish you all the best.
Yes.
But maybe Monday I may drop in and see you.
Quite welcome.
If
I'll be
you
happy.
Are here.
Yes, yes.
Because that day is the day of packing.
Well, I can pack into the night. Not much to be there. Leave there.
All the books.
Take all the
books and put it all together.
Put them in the box.
Your wife had no problem with the luggage?
No. We got a weighing machine from one of our friends here in Divinity Road. And we put all the things in the box and weighed it. It just weighed 20 kilos. That is okay.
Well, have a safe journey.
Thank you very much.
And to you too. I think you're leaving pretty soon.
Yeah, I'll leave the first week of July. I'm going for 3 weeks.
Oh, great.
Really nice meeting you.
Yes.
And I'll look to see you again the next term.
Okay, great.
So John Murray. Have a great time.
Your name as
Giri.
Well.
Giri. Giri. Have a great time with your studies.
You too. Thank you.
He also has an Indian name.
See?
Shetrajan.